It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill in beautiful Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 39 degrees. We're looking for rain and snow showers, turning to just plain rain, turning to a slight chance of rain and snow showers after 3 p.m. Northeast wind to 15 miles per hour today. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 29. Sunny skies tomorrow. Coming up on the midday news, Upper Cook Inlet sockeye fishermen get their forecast. It is not a good one. The Northern Bering Sea Climate Resilience Area. What is it? And Alaska poets respond to Amanda Gorman. After this.
From NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The logistics of former President Donald Trump's second impeachment trial are starting to take shape. In a few hours, House Democrats will send the U.S. Senate the article of impeachment charging Trump with inciting an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, where Congress was working to certify Joe Biden's election on January 6th. Tomorrow, senators will be sworn in as jurors. And unlike Trump's first impeachment trial, the president pro tempore will preside over the upcoming trial. NPR's Windsor Johnston has more on that.
The Senate's longest-serving Democrat, Patrick Leahy, will preside. Traditionally, the nation's Chief Justice fulfills that role, but this is the first time a president will be tried after he's left office, so it falls to Leahy as Senate pro tem to take on that responsibility. Democrats haven't said whether they'll call witnesses or how long the trial will be. It takes a two-thirds majority to convict, which would require no fewer than 17 Republicans to vote against Trump.
NPR's Windsor Johnston. The U.S. Supreme Court has dismissed as moot two cases brought by former President Trump's business competitors alleging he wrongfully profited, though his office as president in violation of the Emoluments Clause in the Constitution, rather through his office. Details from NPR's Nina Totenberg.
The District of Columbia and high-end hotels and restaurants that competed with Trump's businesses sued him, alleging that he violated the Emoluments Clause, which bars the president from accepting from any foreign government any emoluments, meaning any benefit or advantage. Trump, unlike other modern presidents, did not use a blind trust to separate his private business interests from his public actions, and the suit charged that he had profited directly by accepting payments from foreign and domestic officials who patronized various Trump businesses, including his gold-gilded hotel in Washington, D.C. The lower courts had allowed the suits to go forward, but in dismissing the cases as moot, the Supreme Court wiped all those rulings off the books. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
President Biden's repealing a Trump-era ban on transgender people serving in the U.S. military. More from NPR's Scott Detrow.
President Trump first announced a ban on transgender service members in July 2017, though federal courts blocked it from taking effect for more than a year. Biden had long promised to immediately repeal the ban. Biden signed an order overturning the ban during a Monday Oval Office meeting with his new defense secretary, Lloyd Austin, as well as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley. Biden's order will immediately bar the military from discharging service members or barring them from reenlistment based on their gender identity. It also orders the Defense Department and the Department of Homeland Security to immediately take all other steps needed to make sure Trump's ban is no longer in effect. Scott Detrow, NPR News, The White House.
This is NPR.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization was again unable to provide an updated COVID-19 case count for today. The most recently available data comes from Saturday, when one new community transmission case was reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. This brings the total case count to 1,025 cases since the start of the pandemic, with 33 cases classified as active locally. Current hospitalization information was provided. There have been 41 local hospitalizations to death to date and 5 deaths associated with COVID-19 in the Kodiak Island borough. There are currently no active COVID-19 cases hospitalized in Kodiak. Upper Cook Inlet fishermen should expect another below-average sockeye salmon run this year. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game forecasts a return of 4,370,000 sockeye to Upper Cook Inlet in 2021, according to a report released on Friday. Brian Marston, Fish and Game's area manager for UCI Commercial Fisheries, says the projections aren't surprising.
We have seen lower than average runs, or right around the 4.3 million mark, which is what we're predicting this year. So it's not too different from recent numbers, but it is below average.
The inlet's 20-year average is nearly 6 million sockeye, but runs over the last few years have been lower. Last year's sockeye run was the lowest since 1971 at 4.36 million fish. Commercial fishermen saw a harvest of 700,000 salmon in 2020, over 1 million short of the preseason projection. The Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly asked state and federal governments to declare a fisheries failure an economic disaster. Assemblyman Brent Johnson, himself a set netter, laid out the factors contributing to the bad harvest at the Assembly's January 19th meeting.
So these fishermen were getting hammered in three ways right there. One, they didn't catch very many of the primary target species, sockeye. Of those sockeye that they did catch, they were smaller than they normally are, and then the price went to pot.
The borough says it hasn't gotten a response from the state since sending a request in October. It sent the request to federal officials this week. The 2021 forecast projects a Kenai River run of 2,325,000 sockeye. That's over a million fewer than the 20-year average. The run projection for the Kasilof River is 881,000. That's down from the 20-year average of 986,000. For the Susitna River, the forecast is looking up, 436,000 from the 20-year average of 377. Same with Fish Creek, up to 92,000 fish from 86,000. Fishermen are waiting on the Chinook preseason forecast for more insight on how the upcoming season will go. Low King runs last year added insult to injury for Cook Inlet fishermen. President Joe Biden passed several climate-related executive orders on his first day in office earlier this week, last week rather. Among those is an order reinstating the Northern Bering Sea Climate Resilience Area, an Obama-era executive order that includes protections from offshore oil and gas leasing in the Norton Sound and waters around the St. Lawrence Island. KNOM's Emily Hofstetter reports on the implications the order has for Bering Sea tribes.
The original order was revoked in the early months of President Donald Trump's presidency. Now the reinstated order outlines policies on marine shipping, pollution, marine debris, and oil spills, among other Arctic marine-related issues. The entire resilience area stretches over 112,000 miles, from the Kuskokwim Bay to the southern border of the Chukchi Sea. But for groups in western Alaska, one of the most significant things about the order is that it acknowledges the importance of using local indigenous knowledge. The federal task force responsible for the Northern Bering Sea Climate Resilience Area would include an intergovernmental tribal advisory council. Bering Sea Elders Group Executive Director Melissa Johnson calls that a milestone for incorporating indigenous people into federal conversations and policy on climate change.
That council focuses on the matters that affect us as indigenous people who live along the Bering Sea coast, who rely on the Bering Sea coast, who pass that knowledge on to our future generations.
Johnson and others emphasize that anything addressing climate change and activities in the Bering Sea should include local tribes. In 2016, the elders and 39 tribes reportedly petitioned the Obama administration for additional marine protections, one of their primary concerns being the way increased Arctic shipping could impact marine mammal migrations and subsistence hunting.
a lot of Arctic policy is being proposed, decided upon, even written by people who are not from this region.
That's Kuwerik Marine Advocate Austin Amasuk. He bid the new order welcome after years of Arctic policy that he says has not adequately included the people most affected.
We're glad that it prohibits oil and gas leasing in those planning basins. We're, of course, glad about the prohibition of bottom trawling into the Northern Bering Sea. And then we look very much forward to how communities will be involved as advisors in Northern Bering Sea management.
The original 2016 executive order drew sharp criticism from the Alaska congressional delegation. Senator Dan Sullivan called it a, quote, unilateral plan to harm Alaskans, unquote. The delegation has not yet issued a statement or responded to requests for comment on Biden's decision to reinstate the 2016 executive order. The Dunleavy administration would not comment specifically on the reinstatement of the Northern Bering Sea Climate Resilience Area, but in a statement from the Alaska Department of Law, Assistant Attorney General Maria Barr wrote that the impacts of Biden's executive orders are still being reviewed for their effects on state agencies. She wrote, quote, these are complicated and evolving issues and will take some time to fully analyze. Reporting in Nome, I'm Emily Hofstetter.
Port of Seattle police arrested a man Saturday morning after authorities say he threatened a Ketchikan-bound Alaska Airlines flight. Police did not release the suspect's identity. Port of Seattle spokesperson Kate Hudson said in an email, quote, on board the aircraft, the suspect called in a false claim of a security threat, end quote. It's not clear when the threat was made or to whom it was directed. Hudson said the police responded at about 7:30 a.m. local time. She said passengers of Flight 65 were removed from the plane, interviewed, and their luggage screened. The aircraft was later cleared, Hudson said. She said the incident didn't affect operations at the airport. Alaska Airlines spokesperson Kaylee Olson said the passengers were transferred to another aircraft. She said delays from the incident were limited to Saturday's five stops on Flight 65, also known as the Milk Run. That flight runs from Seattle to Anchorage daily with stops along the way in four southeast Alaska cities. Olson called the suspect an, quote, unruly passenger, unquote. Ketchikan attorney Stephen Bradford was heading home on Flight 65 Saturday morning. He says shortly after the plane started taxiing, an unnamed man walked toward the cockpit. Bradford said a flight attendant stopped the man, who Bradford estimated was in his 20s or 30s, and told him to turn around and return to his seat.
And he did. He turned around and went back down the aisle, but quickly came forward again. And she stood up to block his way a little bit, but also she was grabbing for the phone to notify the cockpit, and he just kind of brushed past her and went quickly into the lavatory.
Bradford said the suspect wasn't in the bathroom for long. Bradford said he watched as a flight attendant scolded him and told him to put his black gator-style mask back on and return to his seat. Bradford said the flight attendant opened the door to the lavatory, called the cockpit, and the plane came to a halt. The plane then proceeded to a runway on the west side of the airport. Port spokesperson Hudson says that's standard practice for security clearance. Bradford says he saw more than a dozen police cars waiting. He says four officers boarded the plane, including two with rifles, and arrested the suspect without incident. The 30 passengers and five crew eventually departed Seattle on a replacement plane after roughly a seven-hour delay. Bradford praised the Alaska Airlines crew for their calm and professionalism. One of the most celebrated moments of President Joe Biden's inauguration last week featured a poet named Amanda Gorman. Gorman is one of only a handful of poets to perform at a presidential inauguration. She's also the youngest, at age 22. Her identity as a young black woman and the poem she read captured people around the world, including here in Alaska. Alaska Public Media's Mayoa Aina spoke with local artists about what Gorman's performance meant to them and their work.
Juneau-based poet Christy Nami Erickson says her social media timeline was flooded with reactions to Gorman's poem after the inauguration.
That was one of our favorite parts of the inauguration, right? Nobody's really quoting anything Joe Biden said. Everybody is quoting the poet.
Even more than the reaction, Erickson says it was the representation that felt the most special to her. Erickson, who is Asian American, says Gorman's identity sent a powerful message.
Anytime I see another young woman of color be given a large stage and use it to speak a truth that resonates so deeply with the experience of her community, it's empowering.
That representation resonated with Anchorage poet Jen Stever, too. Stever woke her 2-year-old daughter to watch the inauguration Wednesday. As an Inupiaq woman, Stever identified with Gorman as a person of color, a woman, and an emerging writer. She says watching Gorman and Kamala Harris take the stage with the world watching was significant.
And also having my daughter see those things as well. She's young, but she'll hopefully live in a world where there aren't these ceilings because these women are kind of shattering them.
And 18-year-old Michaela Blewett says watching Gorman perform reminded her of the first time she took the stage. Blewett is a graduate of Bartlett High School in Anchorage, and she now attends the University of Nevada. Blewett says at her first performance, she was really nervous and nearly backed out. But the supportive reaction to her work inspired her to keep going. So she could only imagine how Gorman felt at the inauguration. In Gorman, Blewett says she recognized herself.
It was breathtaking. Like, I started getting teary-eyed. It was, especially seeing someone so young be able to do it, it was amazing.
Erickson says Kamala Harris gave women of color something to aspire to, that we could be there serving in the most powerful offices in America.
But when Amanda Gorman read her poem, I feel like we were there. I feel like we were in the audience. You know, we were in her poem. When people say that they were moved by her piece, I think it's true. I think we were transported there.
Erickson says she hopes that Gorman's poem and the powerful reaction to it encourages more people to invest in the arts. Erickson shared an excerpt from an original poem of hers with Alaska Public Media. The poem is called Families Belong Together. It was written in response to family separation.
The night there was a rally, I held my son before bed. His breath touched my breath. His smile is his father's smile. Because of this, they are always together. He is still too young to know he is a protest. He understands the language of loss, but doesn't speak it. Today, while thousands marched, he was just a boy who went fishing with his grandpa. In the stillness, I can smell the sea on his skin. If anyone tried to separate us, I would swallow the ocean just to shipwreck them. I would draw a maze around a maze around a maze until they could not find us. I would run forever, and I would never break eye contact. I would wake us up again and again before we became ghosts. I already know how.
In Anchorage, I'm Mayowa Aina.
Governor Mike Dunleavy announced in December that his administration plans to split Alaska's Department of Health and Social Services into two. Among many other impacts, that move would put the state's foster care system in a new department. Tribal organizations, advocates for foster children, and the largest state worker union are all voicing their concerns. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman has this report.
When the administration announced the change, it emphasized that it's aiming to improve outcomes, including for children and families, by having two more focused departments to provide oversight. The plan to separate a new Department of Family and Community Services from the Department of Health may also divide the Office of Children's Services, which oversees foster care, into two offices. Several groups expressed concerns about children's services to lawmakers at a mid-January hearing. Among these groups are tribes that have been working with the state to implement a compact that gives tribes more responsibility for child welfare. Richard Peterson is the president of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, which has been working on the compact.
The time to find a new commissioner, directors, and staff will be a challenge. The state struggles to fill the vacancies currently, leaving many of our programs and families not receiving the attention they deserve.
He says the tribe should have been consulted before the state rolled out the proposal, not after. He notes that most children in Alaska's foster system are Alaska Native.
And I think that will only get worse if we're not involved.
Amanda Mativier advocates for foster children as the co-founder and director of the nonprofit Facing Foster Care in Alaska. She says the state hasn't provided evidence as to why children and families should have to deal with two offices. She says that the system is already confusing, and it's hard to know which office will play what role.
To then have to deal with multiple systems, I think it could just be absolutely daunting.
Mativier says the plan wasn't prepared in a spirit of collaboration with those involved in foster care.
There hasn't been any effort to directly engage young people, youth in that process.
State officials have emphasized that they're currently engaging with stakeholders and will consult with tribes on potential changes to the Office of Children's Services. And they also say that splitting the department will not substantively change or impact the state tribal compact. Jake Metcalf, executive director of the Alaska State Employees Association, says his union is concerned that the state is laying the groundwork for outsourcing children's services jobs.
If this were to happen, this work would leave Alaska. It would undoubtedly impact the quality of services, which are sensitive in nature and require local-based knowledge for the administration of services.
Dunleavy could split the Department of Health and Social Services using an executive order. But an executive order can't be used to privatize or outsource any state services. The executive order is expected during the legislative session, with the goal of having it go into effect on July 1st. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Seaweed can help save the world from cow farts. More after this.
Seafood Auction says thanks to longline fishermen and seafood buyers for a successful 2020 season and looks forward to working together again in 2021. Learn more at seafoodauction.net.
They are coming to take our cows away, claim critics of the proposed Green New Deal that's cropped up in Congress. The deal calls for major investments in clean energy jobs and infrastructure to help transform to a more earth-friendly economy. It's making some farmers uneasy because fingers are pointing at cows as big polluters from all the methane gas they pass. Most of the gas is actually belched and not released from the back end. Cow burps account for 26% of the nation's total methane emissions, according to the EPA. Seaweed can help put the brakes on all those burps. Researchers in Australia started investigating after a dairy farmer in Canada noticed cows that grazed on washed-up seaweed along the shore were healthier and more productive than those in the field. A study 5 years ago by Canadian researchers confirmed those results, and they tested 20 different kinds of seaweed in cow feeds. Overall, it reduced methane production by up to 50%, but required high doses of seaweed, almost 20% by sample weight. Enter Asparagopsis, a red seaweed found throughout the Pacific. The Queensland researchers found that adding less than 2% to a cow's diet reduced its methane output by up to 99%. The cows have good taste. Asparagopsis is one of the most popular seaweed ingredients in Hawaiian cuisine and is used traditionally in poke. The problem now is producing enough of it. The researchers said wild harvesting of the red seaweed is not sustainable, and it will take financial and industry backers to cultivate the methane-suppressing seaweed on an industrial scale. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday, It's the 25th day of January, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 9:25. It will set again at 5:21 this afternoon, giving us 7 hours and 55 minutes, almost 8 hours of daylight. That's a gain of 4 minutes and 5 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, here on the east side, we have a low tide coming up at 6:30 p.m. of 0.25 feet, followed by a high tide at 1:09 a.m., 6.4-foot tide. Our next low tide will be at 5:49 a.m., 3.7 feet, and our high tide at noon tomorrow, 11:59, will be a 9.2-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are your Gannett Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 6:50 p.m. That will be a 0.8-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 1:17 a.m. of 12.55 feet. Your next low tide will be at 6:48 a.m. of 5 feet, and your high tide tomorrow afternoon will be at 12:34 p.m., 14.36 feet on the west side. 39 degrees right now. We're looking for just a slight chance of rain and snow showers after 4 p.m., chance of rain and snow showers until then. Cloudy skies overnight with a high near 40 tonight for today and a low near 29 tonight. Northeast wind to 15 miles per hour should turn to the northwest after midnight tonight. For tomorrow, sunny skies, high near 38, northwest wind to 15. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy skies, a low around 26. Northwest winds to 15 miles per hour become light and variable after midnight. Slight chance of snow on Wednesday between 1 and 4 p.m. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 992 millibar low, 80 nautical miles southeast of Sand Point, will move to 220 nautical miles southeast of Kodiak City and go to 993 millibars on Monday evening. It will then exit the southern Gulf by Tuesday morning. Weak low pressure lingers over the Gulf through Wednesday morning, will linger over the Gulf through Wednesday morning. As a result, we have a gale warning today. Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. East wind to 35 knots right now, except northeast 25 knots north of Dangerous Cape. Seas to 10 feet. For tonight, north wind 25 knots, seas to 13 feet. And for tomorrow on the east side, look for northwest wind 30 knots, seas to 10 feet. Over on the west side in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Tuesday. Northeast wind to 30 knots right now and seas to 9 feet in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, look for west wind 25 knots, seas to 6 feet. For inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. Chiniak Bay, northeast wind to 20 knots right now and seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, northwest wind to 10 knots, increasing to 15 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, east wind to 20 knots, seas to 4 feet right now. For tomorrow, northwest wind to 15 knots, seas to 2 feet in Marmot Bay. Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session on Tuesday. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held virtually. Public members are encouraged to tune in here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. Meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. And for those of you who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, contact the clerk's office at 486-8636. The City Council will be holding its regular council meeting on Thursday. This meeting will also begin at 7:30 p.m., also be held virtually. And again, please go to the City's website for meeting packets and materials. And if you have any questions at all, call 486-8636, the clerk's office, and you can listen on Thursday evening at 7:30 p.m. right here on KMXT to hear that meeting. The Kodiak Archipelago Cooperative Weed Management Area meeting is happening tomorrow. That's happening at 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. via Zoom. What the CWMA is, it's a partnership between different entities and landowners. They try to manage invasive plants on all of the islands of Kodiak. Invasive species can threaten wildlife and fish habitat, poison livestock, and degrade ecosystems. This meeting is free and everyone's welcome. Again, that's tomorrow, 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. via Zoom. For more information and to get the Zoom link, email Danielle, that's Danielle.Butts, B-U-T-T-S, at kodiaksoilandwater.org. Do you hear that? Of course you don't. That's because it's the sound of KMXT's first ever online silent auction. It'll be held over the weekend starting February 5th. You can visit kmxt.org to bid on and win incredible variety of one-of-a-kinds and must-haves around town. And there really are some cool things. Just go to kmxt.org. The Assembly is having a work session on Thursday. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. via teleconference. And if you'd like to view it or participate, go to the Borough website for information.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.